Thank you for choosing to take a self-guided tour with Free Tours by Foot. We believe in operating quality tours that are affordable to everybody, regardless of their budget, and we hope that you enjoy your tour with us today. You've chosen to come along on our self-guided Hyde Park tour, a walk that will take you through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the city. Today, you'll visit beautiful rose gardens, a perfectly handmade body of water, fascinating statues, important monuments, and you'll start and finish at two triumphal arches. On the tour today, you can expect to walk around 2.5 miles, or 4 kilometers. The tour will last, on average, around 2 hours, although this may change depending on your walking pace or stops you wish to make along the way. For guests with mobility issues, or those with prams or buggies, the entire route is step-free and sticks mostly to paved pathways. If at any point you wish to explore a location further, please do. To make the most of your visit to this royal park, consider also taking our self-guided tour of Kensington Gardens just nearby. These two parks used to be considered a single location, so it's worth exploring them both. You'll find only 2 overlapping locations, and the tours can easily be completed in the same day. To start your Hyde Park tour, go to Marble Arch Station. Exit the station via the Hyde Park exit. As soon as you come out, you will see the Marble Arch itself. Position yourself for a good view and play the first clip. Marble Arch initially had much grander designs than sitting in the center of a busy roundabout. The arch was designed by architect John Nash in 1827 and was intended to be the official state entrance to Buckingham Palace. If Nash's original plan had come to final fruition, Marble Arch would today be situated in the courtyard of Buckingham Palace, just in front of the famous palace balcony. King George IV had requested the construction of the arch. However, he died in 1830 before it was completed. The new king, George's brother, William IV, refused to continue paying for the creation of the structure. He disliked both the arch and the idea of spending money and time to update Buckingham Palace, a building he had no interest in using himself. He hated the palace so much, he actually tried offloading it onto Parliament as their new home after the original Palace of Westminster burned down, an offer they refused. Eventually, William acquiesced to the completion of the project, and in 1833, the arch was completed and stood just in front of Buckingham Palace. On Queen Victoria's accession to the throne just 4 years later, Buckingham Palace suddenly became a hub of royal activity and life. The Queen's expanding family of 9 children required that the palace be extended, and the arch was moved out of the way so a new wing to the palace could be added. The arch was then dismantled and rebuilt here in 1847 to act as a ceremonial entrance to Hyde Park. Originally, the arch was a beautiful, gleaming white, but the pollution of the London atmosphere meant that the marble quickly began to fade. And in the year it was rebuilt, London Magazine described the arch as, quote, discolored by smoke and damp, and in appearance resembling a huge sugar erection in a confectioner's shop window. Now in a central location, the arch was utilized and was actually transformed into a police station in 1851 and was used as such until 1968. It's often speculated that the arch may be moved again, this time to sit actually inside the boundaries of Hyde Park instead of outside on what is essentially a traffic island. However, as of now, there are no concrete plans for this to take place. With your back to the arch and the underground station, walk forward toward the park. You will come to a road crossing broken up into 2 parts. Take them both and enter the park. Once you've entered Hyde Park, you'll be facing a number of paved paths. Take the one furthest left, with the lampposts in the center. Walk until you get to the small hut with the green roof and benches on your right-hand side, then play the next clip. This northeast point of Hyde Park has been a popular place for public speaking since the 1800s. After a number of protests and demonstrations in Hyde Park over the centuries, Parliament finally set aside this area for free speech in 1872. Any member of the public can speak here, and about almost anything. Until recently, English law prohibited certain speech in the UK, including Speaker's Corner. Speeches including obscenities, blasphemy, inciting a breach of the peace, or insulting the late queen were prohibited. However, a ruling in 1999 upheld the right to, quote, be offensive. The ruling states that freedom of speech extends to, quote, the irritating, the contentious, the eccentric, the vertical, the unwelcome, and the provocative, as long as such speech does not tend to provoke violence. Today, most speakers here are preaching on religious and political matters, both topics having actually caused riots to break out here in decades gone past. Notable people who have spoken here include Vladimir Lenin, George Orwell, and Karl Marx, just to name a few. Continue in the same direction you've been walking in, and take the first left to the edge of the busy road. The statue across the street is your next point of interest. Once you can see the statues of the animals, play the next clip. Here you're facing the unique and powerful Animals in War Memorial, commemorating animals that have died in wars and conflicts. As the inscription reminds us, quote, they had no choice. It was inspired by author Jilly Cooper's 1983 book Animals in War, and was paid for by a specially created fund, which Cooper was involved in, consisting of £1.4 million in raised public donations. Unveiled by Princess Anne in 2004, on the 90th anniversary of the start of World War I, the monument features animals from mules, who were used during World War II, their vocal cords cut to ensure their silence, all the way down to glowworms, used by soldiers as sources of light in the First World War. Designed by David Backhouse, the memorial consists of a Portland stone wall, bronze statues, and numerous carvings commemorating animals, quote, from the pigeon to the elephant. Now, turn your back to the monument and return to the path you've been using. Turn left and continue walking until you get to a number of pathways leading off to your right. Take the second path, counting from your right-hand side, the one that is essentially directly to your right as you stand in the direction you've been walking. Follow that path until you come to a small, open area where a number of paths converge. When you have a good view of the circular monument in the center, play the next clip. This memorial is one of London's little mysteries. In 1866, an oak tree in Hyde Park became the focus of protests by the Reform League, a group campaigning to give all adult men the right to vote. The tree became known as the Reformers' Tree, and, during one protest, was set on fire, leaving nothing behind but a charred stump. However, that stump became a rallying point and a symbol of discontent with society. It soon became used as a rallying point, a public notice board, as well as a popular symbol of the right for people to assemble in the park. Not long after, in 1872, Speaker's Corner was officially designated by Parliament, and that then became the location for public speaking and protests. In the year 2000, on what was proclaimed to be the site of the original Reformers' Tree, this mosaic, made of black and white pebbles, was unveiled by politician Tony Benn, placed here to commemorate the history that took place on this site. But the history of this site, and the monument, may not be so straightforward. The memorial features a carving that states, quote, this mosaic has been designed to commemorate the Reformers' Tree. A new oak tree was planted by the then Prime Minister James Callaghan on 7th of November 1977, on the spot where the Reformers' Tree was thought to have stood. This would imply that the mosaic is not marking the original site, but there are also no new oak trees nearby that can be identified as one planted by the Prime Minister. An 1866 painting of a meeting at the Reformers' Tree features a tree, yes, but an elm, not an oak. And an ex-police sergeant, who worked for over 2 decades in Hyde Park, wrote that the tree was already dead before the Reformers began meeting there, and then went on to write that there was, indeed, a tree set on fire nearby, but it was caused by, quote, mischievous schoolboys, and had nothing to do with any protests or riots. So, the truth of the Reformers' Tree is, as of yet, to be uncovered. Surrounding the monument on the ground, you will notice small arrows dictating different directions. Locate the one that says the old police house and take the path it indicates. Walk until you reach the large brick house, the old police house, still a working police station. There, turn left and walk along the front of the police house. Walk until the path dead ends at a body of water, the Serpentine. Turn right and walk along the water, playing the clip as you go. Note that when the path eventually splits into two, take the right fork up toward the bridge you'll see ahead of you. This man-made recreational lake was created at the behest of Queen Caroline of Ansbach, wife to King George II, in 1730. Caroline was the spearhead for a total renovation of Hyde Park and Kensington Gardens, and most of what you see here today is down to her. The River Westbourne, which flows from Hampstead to the Thames, once passed straight through this park. Caroline ordered it dammed up, and a man-made lake made from the waters of both that and the Tyburn Brook that once flowed here, although these days the water is now pumped in from the Thames. The beautiful lake has a surface area of 40 acres, with a maximum depth of 17 feet, or 5.2 meters, and it was named the Serpentine after its snake-like curving shape. It comes from here, in Hyde Park, before bending and moving into Kensington Gardens. At the time of construction, most artificial lakes were built long and straight, so the Serpentine was considered strange, having purposefully been designed to look natural, a feature that was soon imitated in parks and gardens throughout the country. Previously, it was the focal point of national celebrations. In 1814, there was a recreation of the British victory at Trafalgar carried out on the water as part of a huge celebration carried out commemorating 100 years of Hanoverian rule. The Crystal Palace was erected on the shore, and parts of the Great Exhibition were held here. And more recently, it was the location of the 1977 Silver Jubilee celebrations, as well as a venue for the Summer Olympics. The Serpentine was created not only to be beautiful, but also provide a location for leisure activities such as boating and later swimming. In 2012, during the London Olympics, it was the venue for the men and women's triathlon and marathon swimming events. It's actually home to Britain's oldest swimming club, the Serpentine Swimming Club. Members swim here between 5:30 and 9:30 a.m. every day of the year, including their famous dive every Christmas morning. Their lido, a designated portion of the Serpentine, is open to the public in the warmer months, meaning you too can swim here. Or, if you'd prefer to keep dry, you can rent a rowboat or a pedalo to take you out onto the water from April to October. When the path you're on eventually splits into two, take the right fork up toward the bridge you see ahead of you. You'll see a small building just opposite on the other side of the street. This is your next stop.
The Serpentine Gallery
either actually
play the clip from where you're standing
buildings, or across
each
the street
one
to get
on
a better
either
view.
Side of the Serpentine
the
Bridge
is yours.
The Kensington Garden side was the first, established in 1970, and located inside a former 1930s tea pavilion. You'll find it on the other side of the bridge. The second gallery, the one you're facing on the Hyde Park side, was opened in 2013 and is located inside a former gunpowder store from 1805. The Serpentine Gallery features contemporary art by both well-known and up-and-coming artists and presents an expanded program of contemporary art and architecture. The exhibitions here are timed to change with and reflect the seasons, with new exhibitions specifically designed to change four times throughout the year. Also, there's a yearly tradition in the summer where the Serpentine commissions an architect who has not previously built anything in the UK to design a temporary pavilion outside the Kensington Gardens site. The pavilion is erected on the lawn in front of the gallery and must be constructed so that the public can walk in and amongst the structure. And of course, all of this is free. If you've crossed the street, return to the other side of the road. Facing the gallery, turn left and follow the road as it curves around and onto the bridge. About halfway across the bridge, enjoy the views over the water and the direction you've just walked from. It's a great place for photographs. Whenever you're ready, continue along the bridge. Walk until you can make a left into the park. Follow that curving path until you reach the large circular fountain ahead of you. Once there, play the next clip. Few British royals have ever captured the hearts of the public as quickly and as completely as Princess Diana. From her debut on the world stage during her 1981 marriage to Charles, the then Prince of Wales, to her untimely death in a Paris car crash in 1997, the world was obsessed with Diana. In 2004, a memorial fountain honoring her life was unveiled here in the park. Initially plagued with controversy, today the fountain offers joy and an excellent way to cool off during the summer months to the thousands who visit the fountain every year. The memorial fountain was designed by an American landscape artist, Catherine Gustafson. The artist wanted the fountain to be easily accessible to the public to reflect Diana's inclusive personality and to showcase the fact that she was seen as an accessible figure to the public. The fountain cost £3.6 million to construct and was pieced together using 545 separate pieces of granite from Cornwall. Note that the fountain is not smooth and consists of numerous cuts, elevated steps of different sizes, false rocks, and smooth pieces, but the bottom part of the fountain is a tranquil pool. All the different effects and textures built into the stream are said to represent the parts of Diana's life, the turmoil, as well as the happy times. At first, the fountain came under some criticism because of the cost that was spent. Many people questioned the will of Princess Diana. Would she have wanted over £3 million spent on a fountain to reflect her life? Many doubted that would be the case. Controversy also raged over the name of the fountain, with many complaining that the word fountain wasn't actually applicable to the memorial at all. In addition, the fountain was a source of some embarrassment within mere days of opening to the public. Unfortunately, the fact that the fountain was made to be accessible meant that a number of accidents took place when it was initially opened. Shortly after its debut, the fountain was the cause of 3 hospitalizations, all of people who had slipped in the water, some breaking their ankles, while walking along the circular route. Complaints were also raised that the leaves of the nearby trees were floating into the water and making it unsafe for visitors to tread through. The initial reaction to this was to close the fountain to the public, surrounding it with a fence and manned with personnel to keep visitors out, the exact opposite of the fountain's original purpose. However, that was quickly abandoned, and today the fountain is again accessible. From the fountain, make your way down to the path running along the water. Facing the Serpentine, turn right, so the bridge you crossed earlier is behind you. Follow the path. At one point, it will veer slightly away from the water. This is taking you around the location of the Serpentine Lido, and is the home of the Serpentine Swimming Club that we mentioned earlier. Enjoy your stroll along the water. Eventually, the path will come to an end, curving around to the right. You will then notice a small patch of garden in the middle of the intersecting pathways. The path you want is on the direct opposite side of that little garden, the large path parallel to the dirt track, marked with the words, "Look both ways." Head onto that path and take a left. When you find a good place to stand nearby, play the next clip. The dirt track ahead of you is known as Rotten Row. The name was originally Route du Roi, French for the King's Road, but through the centuries, it was corrupted into the name Rotten Row, which is what has survived today. This sand-covered avenue is maintained as a bridleway and is part of Hyde Park's South Ride. The whole track runs 4,541 feet, or 1,384 meters, from Hyde Park Corner down to the Serpentine Road on the edge of Kensington Gardens. It was laid out by King William III at the end of the 17th century as an easy way for him to travel between his new residence, Kensington Palace, and his official court, St. James's Palace, in Westminster. Decking out this modern highway were 300 oil lamps to light the way, making this the first artificially lit highway in Britain. In the 18th and 19th centuries, it was a popular location for upper-class Londoners to come riding, and was considered quite a fashionable location. It was very popular for riders to put on their finest clothes and ride along the park, showing themselves off to the rest of upper society. It can still be used by members of the public, should they be lucky enough to have a horse in a stable close enough to use it, or for those taking riding lessons from the two nearby commercial stables. It's also particularly convenient for the horses of the Household Cavalry, who are stabled nearby at Hyde Park Barracks in Knightsbridge. They use this track for practice, but also as a route to the Horse Guards Parade in Westminster for the daily changing of the Horse Guards. Facing the dirt track, with the Serpentine behind you, turn left and continue along Rotten Row. When you get to the four-way path intersection, take the path to your left, walk for a few moments, and stop when you reach the small clearing and pool of water on your left. This is just a quick stop to point out a lovely view of a charming little feature. Just a bit ahead of you and to the left is what's known as the Serpentine Waterfall. It's actually a sluice in the dam that created the Serpentine. The little garden containing it was landscaped in the 1870s by Algernon Mitford, Lord Redesdale, grandfather to the far more famous sisters of the same name. A number of tiny recirculation pumps keep the waterfall flowing, after the outflow of the Serpentine no longer proved full enough to keep it running. Turn your back now to the waterfall and look ahead of you and slightly left. You will see two boulders in a small clearing. This is the Hyde Park Holocaust Memorial. If you wish to get closer, please do so. Play the next clip when you get there, or, if it's easier to stay where you are, play it here. A garden of boulders, surrounded by white-stemmed birch trees, this memorial was Britain's first memorial to the victims of the Holocaust. Situated just east of the Serpentine, the memorial was constructed in 1983 and was designed by Richard Seifert and Derek Lovejoy and partners. The memorial features an inscription from the Book of Lamentations on one of the boulders, inscribed in both English and Hebrew. Today, Hyde Park's Holocaust Memorial is a setting for yearly remembrance services every April. If you walk to the memorial, return to the path you were standing on before. With the waterfall behind you and the memorial in front of you, turn left. Walk a few moments until you can make a sharp right. Follow this pathway down and along until you reach the Rose Garden, which will be on your right-hand side. Depending on the time of year, you might want to take your time here. Play the next clip as you explore. Opened in 1994 and designed by Colvin and Moggridge Landscape Architects, the Hyde Park Rose Garden not only features roses, but also herbaceous plants and other seasonal flowers. It's a charming little slice of Hyde Park and a popular place for photography, as well as quiet reflection and maybe a picnic. The layout of the gardens is based on a number of horns, sounding one's arrival into Hyde Park from Hyde Park Corner. The small, circular area in the center is enclosed by a yew hedge, which represents the mouth of a small horn, and the flower beds represent the beautiful notes coming out of it. It's a bit easier to see from above, so take a look on Google Maps if you get a chance. Featured within the garden are a grand pergola and two fountains, the Boy and Dolphin by Alexander Munro, built in 1862, and the Diana the Huntress Fountain, built in 1899 by Lady Fedoric Lytton, the first female member of the Royal British Society of Sculptors. The best time to visit the Rose Garden is in the early summer, and the flower beds are fully replanted twice a year, both in the summer and once beforehand in spring. But regardless of which time you visit, there's always something beautiful to see. On the opposite side of the Rose Garden from where you came in is Rotten Row again. Make your way down and, with the garden behind you, again facing that dirt track, turn left. The path will end when it meets a small street, South Carriage Drive. It then curves upwards towards your left. Follow the street until you see the large ornamental gate ahead of you. Walk until you're on the other side of the gate and look to the giant statue on your left. Then play the next clip. This 18-foot statue of Achilles, the Greek hero of the Trojan War, represents Prime Minister and military hero Arthur Wellesley, 1st Duke of Wellington. Ordered by King George III and unveiled in 1822, the statue is made by Sir Richard Westmacott, created from 33 tons of bronze from cannon captured in Wellington's military campaigns in France. The head of the statue is said to be based on the Duke himself, although the body is that of a Roman figure from Monte Cavallo in Italy. At the unveiling of the statue, there was so much outrage at the completely nude figure, so a small fig leaf was added very shortly after it was installed. That fig leaf has been the target of 2 attempts by vandals to remove it throughout the last 200 years, but it's, so far, still holding on. Now, put the statue to your back and face the gate you just walked through, and play the next clip. Installed to commemorate the 90th birthday of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, these highly decorative gates are made from stainless steel and were designed by master of metalwork Giuseppe Lund. The loose and scrolling nature of the forged steel reflects the Queen Mother's love of flowers, and the formal symmetry of the metal at the base of the gate turns increasingly wild and free at the top, representing her lifespan of the entire 20th century. The center motif, designed by sculptor David Wynne, features the royal figures of the Unicorn of Scotland and the Lion of England. The gates were officially opened by Queen Elizabeth II in 1993, 3 years after the Queen Mother's 90th birthday. However, it received mixed reviews. Architect Zaha Hadid called it, quote, hideous, while Richard Rogers described it as, quote, romantic candy floss. And one of the Queen Mother's own grandsons, Viscount Linley, said he, quote, absolutely loathed it. Again, with the statue behind you, cross the street until you're right in front of the lion and unicorn design, then cross again. Take the pathway on your right back into the park. Take the first left and walk toward the huge stone gate at the bottom of the pathway. Use whichever archways are open to go to the front of the gate. Once you have a good view, play the next clip. This classical stone gateway with scroll-topped columns is known as Apsley Gate and was designed by architect and landscaper Decimus Burton. Burton had done considerable work in the early 19th century at Regent's Park and was afterwards appointed by the government to carry out a plan to renovate Hyde Park, Green Park, and St. James's Park. He set about demarcating new pathways and gates marking the entrances to these royal spaces. The one you're facing now, sometimes referred to as the Hyde Park Screen, was built from Portland stone between 1826 and 1829. Replacing an ancient toll gate that had previously stood on the site. Decorative elements of the gate include columns, an elaborate frieze by John Henning, Sr. and Jr., which were copied from the Elgin marbles, featuring detailed carvings of over 100 different figures. The gate was built in conjunction with Wellington Arch, which we'll talk about shortly, as part of a grand approach leading from the park to the then newly redeveloped Buckingham Palace. Facing the gate, look to your right. You will see a large stone manor. Walk toward it, and once you're nearby with a good view, play the next clip. Originally built in 1771, and boasting the illustrious address of No. 1 London, Apsley House has been home to the Dukes of Wellington for over 200 years. Designed by Robert Adam, it was built for Lord Apsley in the 1770s, and fell into the hands of the first Duke of Wellington in 1817. The No. 1 London nickname came about as this was the first house passed by visitors who were traveling from the countryside after going through the toll gates at Knightsbridge. Its location also symbolically marks the boundaries between the city of Westminster and the royal boroughs of Kensington and Chelsea and Belgravia. Run by English Heritage, the house is now open to the public as a museum and art gallery. Although the Dukes of Wellington and their families do still live inside, primarily in apartments on the second floor on the north side of the house. Facing the house, turn left. Walk back past the entrance gates to the park to the traffic lights and cross the street to your left. When you get to the concrete median, take the crossing on the left toward the large stone arch with the winged figure on the top. Once you get close to that arch, play the next clip. Although Decimus got the last laugh, much of the interior that was scheduled was scrapped. In a vain effort to curb the king's rampant overspending. The statue on top is part of Burton's original plan, a quadriga, a Roman chariot drawn by four horses atop the arch. However, this plan did not come into fruition until after Decimus Burton's death, as, to the horror of the arch's creator, a large statue, the largest equestrian statue ever made, in fact, depicting the Duke of Wellington, was placed on top of the arch instead in 1828. The statue's placement, which saw the figure of Wellington essentially straddling the arch rather than facing in its same direction, was too large and didn't match with the style of the structure. It was heavily derided in the press and was wildly unpopular with local residents, members of Parliament, and even the Queen. Victoria considered it an eyesore, disrupting her view from Buckingham Palace, although she feared removing it would be an insult to Wellington, so she allowed it to remain there throughout the rest of his life. By 1882, traffic congestion at Hyde Park Corner necessitated the moving of the arch to its current position to widen the road. When plans to move the arch were revealed, Decimus Burton's great-nephew successfully campaigned for the removal of the equestrian statue and the installation of the current bronze one, which was designed by Adrian Jones, and depicts the Angel of Peace descending onto the Chariot of War, and currently holds the record of being the largest bronze sculpture in Europe. Hollow inside, the arch previously housed a small police station until 1992. In 1999, ownership of the arch passed to English Heritage, who are still in control of the monument today. It's open to the public and contains three floors of exhibition, which detail the history of the arch. Additionally, one can see visitors standing on top of Wellington Arch, as those who have paid to go inside are given access to the terraces on top, providing magnificent views over Belgravia and Hyde Park. Just underneath the arch is a ventilation shaft for Hyde Park Corner Underground Station. The hot air coming through this vent often appears as smoke on very cold days, and, on average, the London Fire Brigade receives around 3 emergency calls per year from people reporting that there's a fire underneath the arch. We've come to the end of our self-guided Hyde Park walking tour. If you've enjoyed your walking tour with us and wish to take another self-guided tour, visit our website at www.freetoursbyfoot.com. There you'll find self-guided tours of Royal Westminster, Harry Potter, the Beatles in London, Greenwich, and more. You'll also find information on other audio tours that we offer, and also our full public tour schedule. Free Tours by Foot offers pay-what-you-like walking tours on a daily basis here in London, and we'd love to have you join us. Simply book online. Thank you for touring with Free Tours by Foot, and we hope you've enjoyed every step of your journey.